Hello, this is Bob Sutherland from the North Carolina Reading Service. They have just changed the name. And for the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from a number of sources, the Wall Street Journal, the Triangle Business Journal, from Reuters, Bloomberg. And today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency. They served our community well since 1974. And can be reached by dialing 919-781-1973. Well, the market closed yesterday, Wednesday, September the 4th, closed yesterday afternoon at 26,355.47. That was up 237 points. The Standard & Poor's 500 was up 31.5. to 29,37.78. The NASDAQ was up 102 to close at 79,76.88. Gold was up $4.40 to close at 15,50.30. And crude oil was up $2.32 to close at $56.26. Well, remember the $896 million of surplus revenue that the North Carolina Republican leaders say belongs back in the pockets of taxpayers? Well, we bet that North Carolinians wouldn't mind if at least some of that money went toward fixing the roads and unclogging the interchanges they drive every day. Now, this particular piece is from the editorial board of the News and Observer. We normally do not read those, but we thought perhaps this might be an appropriate one to read. So instead, dozens of road projects in Charlotte and Raleigh, along with hundreds more across the state, are being delayed over the next decade because of financial problems at the North Carolina Department of Transportation. The News and Observer's Richard Stradling reports that those delays are reflected in the latest State Transportation Improvement Program, or an acronym for that, STIP, S-T-I-P. Now, that lays out projects for the next 10 years and was scheduled to be approved by the Board of Education, by the State Board of Transportation on Thursday. Now, in the triangle, affected projects include the redesign and reconstruction of the interchange where Glenwood meets the Raleigh Beltline, and that project, which was set to begin this year, now will not get started until 2028. The widening of U.S. 64 and Carrying Apex, including the conversion of intersections into interchanges, they're going to be delayed from 2022 to 2025, and there are others. The problems stem from a dismal financial picture at North Carolina DOT, which spent nearly $300 million in the last year on cleanups and repairs from Hurricane Florence. The department also spent $300 million, with more bills to come, to settle a lawsuit involving the MAP Act. That's a law passed by the democratically led General Assembly that unconstitutionally allowed the state to reserve land without actually buying it. The MAP Act was overwhelmingly repealed this year. Well, the Federal Reserve said Wednesday the United States economy is still growing steadily, and most businesses are optimistic, even in the face of President Trump's trade wars. In the Fed's latest report on economic conditions nationwide, hiring increased modestly in most industries, though manufacturing employment declined in some areas. The survey covers mid-July to late August. The report, known as the Beige Book, that's beige as in a color, consists of anecdotal accounts from business executives in the Fed's 12 regional district. They will be considered at its next meeting, September 17. Well, the U.S. trade deficit declined in July, including the gap with China that has been the focus of tariffs. The Commerce Department said Wednesday that the gap between the goods and services the U.S. buys and what it sells abroad fell 2.7% to $54 billion in July from June exports. The exports rose 0.6% to $207 billion, while imports ticked down 0.1% to $261 billion. And compared to a year ago, the average trade gap has increased $7 billion. By December 15, the U.S. is scheduled to tax almost every Chinese import. Well, Google on Wednesday agreed to pay a record $170 million fine and to make changes to protect children's privacy on YouTube. That was the case, as regulators said the video site had knowingly and illegally harvested personal information from children and used it to profit by targeting them with ads. Critics denounced the agreement, dismissing the fine as paltry and the required changes as inadequate for protecting children's privacy. The penalty and changes were a part of a settlement with the FTC, that is, the Federal Trade Commission, and New York's Attorney General, which had accused YouTube of violating the Federal Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. Regulators said that YouTube, which is owned by Google, had illegally gathered children's data, including ID codes used to track web browsing over time without their parents' consent. The site also marketed itself to advertisers as a top destination for young children, even as it told some advertising firms that they did not have to comply with the children's privacy law because YouTube did not have viewers younger than 13. YouTube then made millions of dollars by using the information harvested from children to target them with ads, so said regulators. Well, there's at least one bull market underway in recession fears. It's apparent in how ordinary Americans are thinking about the economy. In August, consumer sentiment suffered its biggest drop since 2012, and Google searches for the term recession surged to their highest levels in more than a decade. There are also signs that business activity is slackening. The factor sector is slowing worldwide, and according to a closely watched survey released Tuesday, U.S. manufacturing began contracting in August for the first time since 16. So how worried should Americans really be? Now, the answer isn't as simple as either run for the hills or everything is fine. Rather, based on financial market moves and the economic data available so far, a period of sluggish growth looks more likely than an outright recession. It might be painful in industries directly affected by the trade wars and the global manufacturing slowdown. But those sectors are a relatively small share of the economy. Even as the risk of recession has clearly increased in the last several weeks, there are also sources of resilience that have every chance of proving powerful enough to keep the decade-long expansion going. The economy could experience a rough patch without tilting all the way into recession, which the National Economic Bureau of Research defines as a significant decline in economic activity spread across the economy, lasting more than a few months. Well, the Raleigh City Council approved a rezoning, with strings attached, though, for a new 40-story tower in downtown Raleigh. City leaders unanimously approved the rezoning for the project at Peace and Capitol Boulevard after developers agreed to put affordable housing units in the building. A traffic study must also be completed. Now, to be sustainable, our city needs to grow up and not out, said Bonna Gaylord, a former city council member who represented Kane Realty in the rezoning request. He goes on to say, we're excited to bring forward a mixed-income community that will deliver greater housing equity for our city. Construction could begin in 2 to 3 years, depending on design and other factors. The developers had offered to give $1 million toward the city's affordable housing efforts, but after some city council members objected, they agreed to include affordable units in the project instead. Without the rezoning, which was requested by Kane Realty and Williams Realty, the building would have been limited to 12 stories, and the proposed tower may not take advantage of the full 40 stories it was awarded. In Smoky Hollow, the tower is part of the third phase of that project. The first phase is under construction and includes a 40,000-square-foot Publix grocery store, hundreds of apartments, and hundreds of thousands of square feet for office and retail will be added throughout three phases. The proposed tower would facilitate a mixed-use development that serves as a defining feature for the northern gateway into downtown Raleigh. That's according to the rezoning application. Capitol Boulevard has always been an eyesore, so said developer John Kane during a 2018 interview with the News and Observer. He goes on to say, now we're going to have an entrance that we hope we can be proud of. And Raleigh, like many other cities, needs affordable housing. Nearly one in four households are cost burdened, meaning they pay more than 30% of their income on rent and utilities. That's according to the North Carolina Housing Coalition. The number of affordable units for the project hasn't been released, but the breakdown will fit into one of three categories. 15% of the units as affordable for households earning 80% of the area median income. That's $74,150 for a family of four for 15 years. And then 10% of the units for households earning 60% and 5% of the households earning 50% of the 50% area median income. Traffic was also a concern of many of the residents who spoke at the meeting. Rezonings in downtown Raleigh don't normally require a traffic study, but the developers will do one during the development of the tower. That could result in the tower being smaller. Well, from the Associated Press, the United States and China on Sunday put in place their latest tariff increases on each other's goods, potentially raising prices Americans pay for some clothes, shoes, sporting goods, and other consumer items before the holiday shopping season. President Trump said U.S.-China trade talks were still on for September. He says, we'll see what happens, he told reporters as he returned to the White House from the Camp David presidential retreat. But we can't allow China to rip us off anymore as a country. The 15% U.S. taxes apply to about $112 billion of Chinese imports. All told, more than two-thirds of the consumer goods the United States imports from China now face higher taxes. The administration had largely avoided hitting consumer items in its earlier rounds of tariff increases, but with prices of many retail goods now likely to rise, the Trump administration's move threatens the U.S. economy's main driver, the consumer spending. As businesses pull back on investment spending and exports slow in the face of a weak global growth, American shoppers have been a key bright spot for the economy. Well, this is from the Associated Press in New York. It says, with the National Hurricane Center warning that Dorian could inflict destructive storm surges and dangerous winds, billions of dollars in damage could be caused to homes and other property. Insurance industry experts say there are a number of things homeowners need to consider when assessing material damage in the wake of a hurricane. Now, the first question is, my home is damaged, so what do I do first? Well, when it's safe, make any temporary repairs to prevent further damage. That could be as simple as putting a tarp over a hole in the roof or plywood over a broken window. It's important to document as much as possible to ease your claim process. So take photos or videos of damage and save all receipts for supplies, purchased for repairs. Try to get the claims process started as quickly as possible by contacting your insurance company. Although many insurers will reach out to policyholders directly, most major insurers send teams into the affected areas, but claims can also begin on the phone or online. Now, another question is, what is covered by my policy? A storm of Hurricane Dorian's magnitude may necessitate making claims through multiple insurance policies. The limits of coverage depend on the policy, but they follow a general framework. Property damage from wind is covered under standard homeowners, renters, and business insurance policies, according to the Insurance Information Institute. But flood damage isn't covered through a standard policy. That is traditionally separate coverage purchased through the government's National Flood Insurance Program, although some homeowners may have purchased flood coverage through private insurers. Renters' policies cover only the renter's possessions. The landlord insures the building's structure. Damage to a personal vehicle from winds and flooding is covered under an auto insurance policy's optional comprehensive coverage. That's also according to the Insurance Information Institute. And the industry group said that nearly 80% of drivers choose to purchase comprehensive coverage. Ask your insurance agent or claims rep for details on your coverage and limits. Now, this is a lengthy article, but I do think that these questions here are some that we all like to have answers to. So I'll just finish this article, if that's okay. The next question, what other expenses are covered? And it says the limitations depend on your policy, but many policies typically help cover costs beyond just damage to a structure or belongings. Ask your insurance rep about help paying for the cost of evacuation, temporary housing if your home is uninhabitable, or damage to a structure caused by fallen trees or flying debris. Additionally, if you are worried about lost wages because of missed days at work, talk to your employer. Many businesses have insurance policies that include a provision called ordinary payroll that allows them to pay employees for a set number of days when they are forced to miss work due to a mandatory evacuation. Now, another question, can I get help from FEMA? Well, the Federal Emergency Management Agency provides various forms of financial assistance after a disaster, but it must be declared a federal disaster first. To find out if you qualify for individual assistance, visit, this is the following link called https://www.disasterassistance.gov and enter your address. I'm going to read that again. https://www.disasterassistance.gov and enter your address. The site can also point you toward FEMA disaster recovery centers, which are mobile offices set up after disaster to help those in the area and other resources. Please excuse me. Now, the final question, it's a good one, says, how do I avoid getting scammed on repairs? Be wary of sales representatives or contractors going door-to-door soliciting business. If you have any questions about their legitimacy, contact your local Better Business Bureau or check out their reputation through online clearinghouses such as Angie's List or Yelp. That's Angie, A-N-G-I-E, apostrophe S, List, or Yelp, Y-E-L-P. Also, contact your insurance company before signing a contract for repairs to your home. Only work with licensed and insured contractors. Get more than one estimate. Don't be pushed into signing a contract right away. Get everything in writing, including the cost of labor materials and a work schedule with the completed date. Get ID information from sales reps. Write down the representative's name, driver's license number, and license plate number in case problems arise. Never pay a contractor in full or sign a completion certificate until the work is completed. If you think you're being scammed or want to report suspected fraud, contact your state's Department of Insurance. They are excellent questions. Well, the United Auto Workers Union has picked General Motors as the target company for this year's contract talks with Detroit's three automakers. Excuse me again, please. The move announced Tuesday means that General Motors will be the focus of bargaining, and any deal with the company will set the pattern for Ford and Fiat Chrysler. It also means that if the union decides to go on strike, it will be against General Motors. Contracts between the union representing about 152,000 workers and General Motors, Ford, and Fiat Chrysler, they expire on 11:59 p.m. on the 14th of September. Earlier Tuesday, the union announced that over 96% of its members voted to authorize strikes against the companies. The strike authorization vote is a normal part of the bargaining process, and it doesn't mean that there will be a work stoppage. But tensions are high in contract talks this year because the automakers are making billions in profits and workers want a bigger slice. The companies, though, want to get closer to parity with foreign automakers with United States factories that are mainly in the South. Well, coffee at a downtown Raleigh YMCA dries up this summer. This is from the News and Observer. After a month and a half, Brew Coffee Bar has pulled the plug on its downtown Raleigh cafe. The craft coffee shop opened in early July, taking over the lobby space of the downtown Raleigh Pointer YMCA, which, as you'll recall, is the former offices of Wachovia Bank. Brew announced the closing Wednesday on its Instagram page, saying the response from downtown coffee drinkers was not what the company expected. The spokesman says it hasn't been what we imagined it would be, and when we first started conversations, we knew it would be a gamble for us. The location was a bit out of the normal neighborhood for us, but we had hoped it was something we could grow into. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way we had envisioned. Brew currently has two locations with two or more on the way. The company owned by husband and wife Mary and Cindy Schola has shops in Seaboard Station and downtown Cary. New cafes at Gateway Plaza and McNeil Point are also in the works. Ultimately, it came down to daily sales, and we just don't have enough to keep the staff paid, the lease paid, and our quality up, the Post read. We are thankful for those of you who made the YMC your daily stop and hope that you will find your way to one of our other locations, so said the company. Well, China to hold trade talks in October. Beijing says phone call did go well. China and the United States on Thursday agreed to hold high-level trade talks in early October in Washington. That's amid fears that an escalating trade war could trigger a global economic recession. The talks were agreed to in a phone call between Chinese Vice President Liu He and U.S. Trade Rep Robert Lighthizer and U.S. Secretary of Treasury Steven Mnuchin. China's Commerce Ministry said in a statement on its website, Central Bank Governor Ying Yang was also on the call. Both sides agreed that they should work together and take practical actions to create good conditions for consultations. Lead negotiators from both sides had a really good phone call this morning, Minister Spokesman Yao Feng said in a weekly briefing. He went on to say, we'll strive to achieve substantial progress during the 13th Sino-U.S. high-level negotiations early in October. Gao also said Beijing opposes any escalation in the trade war. Trade teams from both countries will hold talks in mid-September, before the high-level talks next month, the ministry said. A spokesman for U.S. Trade Representative's office said that Lighthizer and Mnuchin spoke with Liu and said they agreed to hold ministry-level trade talks in Washington in the coming weeks. Now, news of the early October talks lifted most Asian share markets on Thursday, raising hopes that can de-escalate the U.S.-China trade war before it inflicts further damage on the global economy. On Sunday, Washington began imposing 15% tariffs on an array of Chinese imports, while China began placing duties on U.S. crude oil. China said on Monday it had lodged a complaint against the United States at the World Trade Organization. The United States plans to increase the tariff rate to 30% from 25% duty already in place on $250 billion of Chinese imports from October 1. President Trump had warned on Tuesday he would be tougher on Beijing in a second term if trade talks dragged on, compounding market fears and that dispute between the United States and China could trigger a U.S. recession. Chinese leaders will have a packed schedule next month, gearing up for National Day celebration scheduled for October 1. They will also hold a key meeting in October to discuss improving governance and perfecting the country's socialist system, state media said. Well, a Spanish gene therapy manufacturer, half owned by Research Triangle Park outfit, has received regulatory approval. That's a significant step in a strategic play to bring revenues where most companies burn capital. San Sebastian-based Viralgen has received good manufacturing practices accreditation and pharmaceutical laboratory authorization by the Spanish Agency for Medicines and Health Products. The company is a joint venture between S-Bio and Columbus Venture Partners. S-Bio secured its half stake in the company through licensing its proprietary Pro 10 cell line. Well, a regional airline under the Delta Airlines umbrella is bringing a maintenance base to the Triangle to support the Raleigh-Durham International Airport. The news confirmed by Delta spokeswoman Catherine Simmons comes as Delta restructures its carrier relationships, putting more emphasis on Endeavor Air, which the Atlanta-based airlines already owns. As part of the restructuring, Delta is moving from 5 to 3 regional carriers, shifting most of the local passenger burden to Endeavor. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure and listen next time. I'm Bob Sutherland, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency. They've served our community since 1974 and can be reached by dialing 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired, and the broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website,